We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Dundee Courier, read by Cathy Clugston.
Amid reports that guests at an event at the Reed Hall in Forfar had to go out and buy their own toilet paper, community councillors have called for a bottom-up review of how the hall is run.
And our thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Hugo Rifkind. And opposite them on my left, Bob Mills and Joe Brand. Jeremy, listen to this.
When you put your left arm in, your left arm out. In, out, you shake it all about. You do the okey-cokey and you turn around. That's what it's all about. Oh, the okey-cokey. Oh, the okey-cokey. Oh, the okey-cokey. Knees bent.
The will to live. Hideous. Jeremy, who has promised in or out once he's shaken it all about?
It's the Prime Minister's speech, and of course the whole week really belongs to Nigel Farage. Shall we call him Nigel Farage? I think that's appropriate. Nigel Farage is all over the news, incredibly pleased with himself. Everybody wants to talk to him. He wants to talk to everybody. He's a showman. He's having his moment. It's a bit like Uri Geller in the 70s. Remember that moment in the 70s whenever we all turned on our tellies and thought, this guy's amazing. He's doing that with his mind. This is the most amazing paranormal event I've seen since Sooty did his thing with his... Wait a minute! And it's going to be like that with Nigel Farage. After a couple of years, we'll think, oh, yeah, we get it. And he'll disappear out of the news again. But Cameron has tried to placate the Tory right who are scared of UKIP, and so he's made this speech to antagonise Europe. And the main thing he seems to be concerned about is that our doctors should not be subject to things like rest, because there's a directive in Europe that doctors should be awake when they're cutting you open and pulling your innards out and putting them back in, which is the sort of ridiculous European meddling that's sending us to hell in a handcart. See, before the European Working Time Directive, you didn't need anaesthetics. You'd see your doctor yawning and it would set you off, and within minutes, you'd be out. You're like, oh, dear. So he's basically, Cameron, wanting to seize back things that we've given to Europe, whatever they are. And Miliband's sort of in a bit of a weird position. What Miliband's doing is keeping Clegg in play because, you know, Clegg and Miliband will form the next government. So Miliband's got to be nice about Europe to please the Liberals.
Did you see him on PMQs, though? I think it's been so long since he had something to say that he's forgotten how to do it. It was like listening to the colour beige.
He accidentally did say something.
Did he?
Yeah, because David Cameron said, do you want a referendum? And he said no. And then you could sort of see him say, bugger.
Yeah.
He said that under his breath.
Because later on, did he not say he might?
He said he might. There. But I reckon that the idea is to have the people who want us to leave Europe want a referendum. But I think we should have a referendum on whether the people who want us to leave Europe leave Europe. Like Haiti or somewhere.
Well, I don't think it's going to do that well, because the YouGov survey published this week says 40% of people want to remain in Europe and 34% want to leave. I don't know about the remaining 26%. Maybe they just usually go to Centre Park, so it doesn't really matter. But
UKIP's main thing is that Europe is moving towards being a state whereby countries are forced to be one country when they're actually different countries. And you think, well, that's sort of here, isn't it? Because we're England, Scotland, Wales, which are three countries, Northern Ireland, which is part of another country. I mean, calling yourself the UK Independence Party doesn't really work. It's like calling yourself the British Empire Liberation Organisation.
It's interesting, though, Bob, the whole thing, the way Cameron has positioned himself, because he says he's sceptical about the whole European thing, but ultimately wants to stay. You know, it's a bit like the Archbishop of Canterbury who's lost his faith, but he thinks he'll keep the job because the hours are good. I mean, it's a sort of
what he's
position.
Doing, what David's doing. Basically,
David.
David, yes, David.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
No? Is he your friend?
What David's doing? What?
Dave.
What Dave's doing?
Yeah.
What Dinky's doing? He's basically out-politicking Miliband, but it's not going to be for a long time. When's he talking about?
Ideally, before the end of 2070. We won't need Europe by 2017,
and also,
will we?
The political spectrum in this country will be very different. I mean, Ed Miliband will be 24 by then. He'll be much more able to grasp these sort of concepts. But also, then she got involved, didn't she, Ange?
Angela.
Oh, Angela got involved.
I love Angela.
She came up to the podium and said, I've heard what you're saying, but you have to understand that the whole point of Europe is that it's all independent nations and we need to be conciliatory.
She didn't say that. She said, ich habe gehören, was sie haben zu sagen. Ich verstehe. And the next bit,
all
what
right.
he said.
Do you know, well, I did love this because she offered to talk intensively with Cameron. And you think, that doesn't mean anything. It's not possible to avoid talking intensively in German, is it? Do you know that even the word for softly spoken has got 15 letters in it? I remember my dad used to say, in World War I, the word for tank was Schützengraben für Nixon's Automobilen. And he said, and that's why they lost, because it took so long to tell them... to tell the tanks to move. David Cameron has promised to renegotiate Britain's membership of the European Union, followed by a straight in-out referendum if the Conservatives win the next election. President Hollande responded to Cameron's call for renegotiation by saying, Europe must be taken as it is. Well, actually, what he said was boof, but that is the nearest English translation. Cameron's offer of an olive branch was rejected by Eurosceptics, who hate olives and any other foreign muck. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, who's been chatting about his chopper while his mates get the chop?
Oh, yes. Mm. Prince Harry.
Yeah.
Basically, there's absolute outrage. What we've done is we've sent a soldier to a war zone, and now we're really, really upset because he might be killing people there. Prince Harry's obviously thinking, you know, they get cross when I kill people, they get cross when I take my clothes off. What do these people want? You know. He did lots of interviews with broadcasters talking about his life in the military and what it's like being a prince. And he was talking a bit about the naked Las Vegas photos. Mm. And he said that his problem there was that it was too much army, not enough prince. Because it's your basic squatty behaviour to be in a luxury Las Vegas suite surrounded by naked people taking photos of you. Yeah, absolutely. But no, he confessed to having killed people from his helicopter, sort of. They said, have you shot anybody? And he said, yes, everybody has. And the Taliban has said he's terribly tactless. But it's, I mean, as someone pointed out this week, it's not quite as tactless as shooting someone in the face for wanting to learn to read, but it's still relatively tactless of him. But it's also very weird that the Taliban have been calling around British newspapers to make a statement about this. Phoning up the news desk going, hello, it's the glorious Mujahideen here. We'd like to complain about your prince.
I didn't know that the Taliban had a spokesman.
Yes, I can't remember his name, but they think he might be several people who use the same name.
Oh, okay.
Johnny Taliban or something.
Well, it was interesting. It wasn't a spokeswoman, isn't it?
He must have killed people before, Harry. I mean, you grew up as a member of the royal family. You're not telling me first day of the grouse season that a whole load of beaters don't just get wasted by the upper class.
Peasants, pheasants, it's almost the same word,
exactly.
Really.
It's not just guns either, is it? There was those 8 fashion designers who died laughing at Princess Beatrice's wedding hat, so...
I love the idea that the Taliban actually complained.
Yeah.
And said, it's all very well killing people, we understand it's war, but to then go on about it, I'm afraid that's rather vulgar.
That's why the Soviets invaded, it was because the Taliban's completely dominated the Russian version of feedback.
In the army, he's known as Captain Wales. Do you not think it doesn't sound quite as good as Captain America? It's sort of wetter and a greater fondness for leeks.
I mean, it's controversial because people say, don't they, should members of the royal family be allowed to go to war?
Oh, I thought you said should be allowed. I thought you were going to just leave it
should
there.
Be allowed, but, well, I think it should be compulsory that they go to war, don't you?
Yes, they should go to
Beatrice
war.
Beatrice and Eugenie in a helicopter in Afghanistan, we'd all like to see that, wouldn't we?
I don't agree about the inner helicopter part, but other than that, yeah.
Prince Harry has given an interview about his five-month tour of duty in Afghanistan in the same week that the army announced it would be making 5,300 redundancies. Harry said he was surprised to be selected as an Apache pilot, as he has no university degree and is absolutely useless at any form of written tests. It's almost as if he was given some sort of special treatment. Some commentators said he was using flippancy in his interview to disguise some horrible truths, like he will never be king and half the world has seen his winky. 2 points to Mr. Rifkin. Bob, who's taking education to a whole new level?
Oh, this is Michael Gove. It's Mike. Michael Gove.
Mikey.
The education system, it's changed a lot over the years, hasn't it? From what I understand, they changed it so that instead of learning everything and then being tested in the exam like you do in every other form of life, like learning to drive or anything like that, you were guided through a set of stages until eventually the school felt you'd reached the right point and then you took an exam, but it was just part of all this other work. And Michael Gove said, no, that's not fair, because that means everyone can get exams, like nervous people and people who aren't good at exams, and they're not the sort of people we want. So now you've just got to learn it all and then have one exam. You've got 2 hours. You're either clever or you're not clever. And if you're not clever, out. And if you are clever, you can come to university. But you can't do that anyway because you haven't got any money. So so we change it. But I didn't quite understand. But my son is at university and he went through the AS level and then the A level. So I phoned him up and said, what do you think? Do you think the AS level is a good thing leading to the A level? Or do you think it's better to have one thing? And he said, what? Who's that? Hang on. hang on, it's me, Dad. Just order two for me. What are you saying? Have you paid my phone bill? So I take it from that that it's whatever the system is, it's failing miserably.
No, but all that stuff, that learning by rote, that's not the way the brain should work, is it? Just memorising disconnected facts. Things that you remember are things that you've assimilated. Like kids learn a language, don't they? You don't teach your kids to speak English. They just pick it up, you know, from listening. But with your exams, there's this one hot, sweaty summer day when you have to remember and everything is crystallised in that moment. And then you just forget all of that stuff forever.
No, I remember some of it. I've never forgotten the names of all of Henry VIII's 13 wives.
Flopsy, Mopsy, Pestilence, Lust, Gluttony, Sleepy, Dozy, Dark. But the thing about Gove is, see, people in government, sometimes they've got experience in the thing that they're the minister for, like Vince Cable, business secretary, used to work in business. Osborne is responsible for the nation's wealth, most of which he owns. Michael Gove's qualification for being Secretary of State for Education seems to be he used to be a child and went to school.
Universities are upset because universities quite like the AS levels he's getting rid of, because they reckon if you went to a decent private school, then if you don't get straight A's at GCSE, you must be some kind of gibbon, which, having been to a decent private school, I know is a sort of fish.
But I took A levels. I didn't do AS levels because I'm 140
too.
Years old. And in my A levels, I got 2 C's and a D, and my mum and dad made me go to college to retake them. And I got 2 D's and an E. So that didn't really work.
Money well spent.
I think so. But then I was very lucky because I got into Brunel University, which, as we all know, is the Arthur Mallard of further education. And there was no arts department. There was 8 men to every 1 woman. And I had a bloody whale of a time.
The government has announced plans to change A-levels from a modular system with exams throughout the sixth form to a system with 2 years of uninterrupted learning followed by exams at the end. Michael Gove. Do you know, whenever I see his name in a headline, I sigh preemptively. Michael Gove said A-levels in their current form did not help students to develop a deep understanding of their subjects. For example, pupils will know that Wellington beat France at the Battle of Waterloo, but they won't realise that it didn't happen at the train station next to the upper crust. 2 points to Bob. Joe, which American is hoping that the sequel won't be a disappointment?
Oh, some bloke in America that got sworn in as president.
That'll do for me. 2 points to Joe.
Thank you.
So,
But obviously the biggest scandal was Beyoncé, queen of hip-hop, lip-syncing or miming to the Star Spangled Banner. And she was, in fact, grassed up by the US Marine Corps, which I think is brilliant. They're obviously quite bitter that they're not Beyoncé and they're not married to Barry Manilow. Is she married to Barry Manilow? Someone famous.
Beyoncé?
Yes.
She's married to Jay-Z, I think.
The amazing thing about that is at one point he got to say, my fiancé, Beyoncé.
This would never happen in this country.
What, lip-syncing?
No, because it just wouldn't be allowed. And the standard, I suppose, was set by Tony Blair, who, of course, was always tough on mime and tough on the causes.
Yay! I'm sorry, she's getting another point for that. That was absolutely shameless. I loved it. Fantastic.
It's just typical of the Obama administration, you know. It's like, fake a song, fake a birth certificate. It's nothing sacred to these people.
Brilliant. But when they did him the first time, Obama,
when
didn't
they?
When he took the oath of office the first time, they mucked that up. He had to do it again.
Yeah.
There's something about the wording was wrong. Apparently, you're not supposed to say, yeah, whatever.
I read up on the Star Spangled Banner. Hmm. It's actually, originally, it was called something like the Battle of Fort McHenry. Hmm. And it's about, we had a war with America in 1812. We did, us, just the panel here, not country as a whole, and we were attacking Baltimore, and when they defended, they made an enormous flag, and it was like 100 feet high, and they got this woman to make it, and she made it out of English wool.
Why?
From the wool mines of Sheffield to scare the British off.
She knitted a flag.
And a bloke wrote a poem called something like The Battle of Fort McHenry, and the tune is an old English drinking song from this society called the Anacreonite Society, who are these weird drunks in London that made up...
Do you have a lot of time on your hands?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
The beginning of Barack Obama's second term as president was marked by a star-studded inauguration ceremony this week at which Obama said he would rid the country of inequality. Obama swore an oath on two Bibles, a full three Bibles short of the five that Donald Trump believes would prove that he isn't a Muslim. 2 points to Joe. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Hugo have got 4 points, but Bob and Joe are in the lead with 5. We start round two with two adjacent headlines from the Church of England Exeter Diocese Monthly News.
Good news from the Church of England in Devon. Bishop Michael to retire.
Now, thanks to Nicholas Horton for sending us that. Jeremy, who says we should start an office romance with a decent lunch?
Is this Anna Soubry?
It is.
Anna Soubry, who's Minister of Food or something? Minister of Health in the government. She's been saying a lot. She says that fat people are poor. And she also said that it's disgusting to eat your lunch over your computer keyboard.
Yes.
And that you should leave your place of work and go and have a proper lunch, which I think is quite admirable, really. I mean, in France, you look at, like, sewage workers and they come out of a drain and they set up a table and they put on a gingham tablecloth and they open an indifferent bottle of Beaujolais, admittedly. But, you know, they do, but they get out knives and forks and they bake some bread and they slaughter a goose in a really inhumane way, having spent all morning stuffing its guts with maize. And they have a 4-hour break, and then they're too drunk to go back to work because they've got a more healthy attitude. So basically, she thinks that what we should do is to kind of have a Tudor banquet in the middle of the day and forget the afternoon, because most jobs are rubbish anyway, aren't they?
She was very incensed, wasn't she?
I had
a sort of sense that she must have a desk at the Commons next to Eric Pickles and she's got some kind of post-traumatic stress thing.
It's his glands. Leave him alone. It's his glands. Sorry. He eats glands. He eats huge plates of glands. Deep-fried glands, chocolate-covered glands, gland meringue pie.
What she actually said was, it's a pretty good bet that if you see someone and they're overweight, if you look into their background, they're probably from a poor background. And I thought, Eric must have been raised in a cave in Sudan.
Yeah, she said it's almost possible to use a person's size to guess their background. You think, well, once they get to a certain size, you've got no choice but to try and guess what's behind them. I think eating your desk is fine. You know, the cord on your mouse makes a very passable cheese wire.
You know, she won't let her daughters use the word fat at home because she doesn't want them to get weight obsessed.
So what happens if you want to cut a bit off a lamb chop?
Mm. Well, quite. What happens if I go round there with a bloody machine gun?
I did like the idea that she doesn't allow her daughters to use the word fat because I think that would be a brilliant house for me to burgle. Well, what did he look like? Well, I'm not allowed to say.
Police are looking for a man who's very comfortable in his own skin.
Who the home owner described as poor.
Yes, I can't say what he looked like, but I suspect he didn't have an indoor toilet when he...
Health Minister Anna Soubry described the habit of eating lunch at your desk as disgusting, saying that workers should take a proper break away from their office. 60% of office workers eat their lunch at their desk. The rest hide under their desk where a government minister can't see them and slag them off. She also said that Britons have a weird relationship with food. At least, I think that's what she said. Her mouth was full of cheese strings. 2 points to Jeremy. Hugo, listen to this. Hugo, who's 9 to 5 could become their 24/7?
Everybody.
Yeah.
This is Nick Bowles, who is the Minister for...
Planning.
Yes, that's what I said, planning. He thinks that what we should do is convert office blocks into flats, so we can not just work in our offices, but live in our offices, which for some of us makes not much difference because we do anyway. But it occurs to me saying that I'm probably the only person sitting up here who actually goes to an office.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Mm. Oh. Great. He thinks there's lots of empty office space and you should be able to turn them into flats without any planning permission, which is quite a good idea because it'll lower house prices and make it easier to get on the ladder, but it's quite a bad idea because you'll have to go quite a long way to get to your office because it won't be there anymore because someone will be living in it.
It could be weird, couldn't it? Because you could be moving into a converted office that you've just been made redundant from.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And especially if it's open plan as well, you know.
Do you think you'd need your swipe card for the loo?
By the way, Nick Bowles is the man who came up with this idea. There's a very good reason why Nick Bowles would want to go and live anywhere else, basically. He used to share a flat with Michael Gove. What it kind of demonstrates, though, is the lack of joined-up thinking. Because if Nick Bowles has his way, which I think is a very good idea, there's a lot of empty offices, you'll have Nick Bowles saying, this is where you live now, this is your home, this is your house, this is your toilet, your bedroom, your kitchen, but then you'll have the health department coming in and saying, but you can't have your lunch here. You've got to go elsewhere for that.
Do you think if your toaster breaks down, you can ring the IT department?
Yes. Somebody, Vince Cable, actually, bless him, said, I think we should go more slowly on this. All right, Vince, you just go at your own pace then and we'll meet you in 1976.
I think it makes perfect sense because they convert warehouses and things and offices. When you think about it, people in offices aren't really doing anything, are they? I mean, the private sector, most people... Yeah, I mean, it used to be you asked somebody what they did and they told you and you thought, oh, I can understand that. And these days you say to somebody, what do you do? And they tell you and you think, yeah, but what do you do? And they say, well, basically, I work for a PR company advising personnel staff in the financial services sector on ways of empowering legal and accounting staff to acquire the interpersonal skills of cascading information on presentation to hoteliers in the conference sector on ways of providing hookers to foreign clients. And you just think... Most of what goes on in the private sector is just rubbish. You could clear all those people out and move in young people who've got nowhere to live.
I do think some jobs are great these days. I recently went on tour and I always get the local paper and have a little chat about what's been going on. And there'd been a competition in this little town to get the jolliest toddler. And one of the judges was a woman that worked for Clinton Cards. And her job at Clinton Cards was head of emotion.
That's fantastic.
I know, and I wanted to work for Clinton Cards as head of menopausal rage, but isn't that great, though? Head of emotion.
What emotions do Clinton Cards do, then? I know they do sympathy.
They do sad you're leaving.
Sad, yeah.
Happy you're leaving.
Yeah.
Quite disturbed you got syphilis. That's yeah.
ambivalent about your driving test?
My brother, so this is a terrible indictment of Clinton cards and Wood Green. My brother last year had a civil partnership, and my wife said, "We need to get them a card." And I said, "Well, okay." And she went into Clinton's, she was in Wood Green. She was visiting some relatives we've got who haven't done quite as well as we have. I'm sorry, but it's true. And she went to the counter and said, "Have you got a card for a civil partnership?" And the woman said, "You need to try Muswell Hill or Highgate or somewhere." "We don't have all that down here, love."
Are there no gay people at all?
No, we don't have nothing of that. We've got a combined 15th birthday and congratulations on the birth of your new child, Carl.
The planning minister, Nick Bowles, is to relax some change of use planning regulations so that empty offices can be converted into flats. 5% of vacant offices could be transformed into 130,000 new homes, or hot desks, as they'll be known. 2 points to Hugo. Bob, why is the rain in Spain not half as bad as the stench from the French?
This is Le Pong, as we're calling it. There was a smell came from France. Well, my first thing is, when did this become news? But something happened in a factory in France and the smell came over and infected Hastings, apparently, and spread all around the South Downs, and South Downs people had to come out and say, "Oh, gosh, it smells."
I'm not really sure how they would have been able to tell in Hastings.
Exactly. I got it confused because I thought it was the cheese that was smelling, because you know all the cheese caught fire.
That was a separate thing. Can you tell me where that happened?
There was a lorry in Norway
that
had crashed with 200 tonnes of cheese in it.
It's a special kind of cheese that they have in Norway called Brunost, which is absolutely delicious. And apparently the tunnel is going to be closed for several weeks.
Because 200 tonnes of cheese, or as we call it, supper. And it caught fire and was burning. And I thought, that must be the smell that's coming. It must be. And I thought, that's a nice smell. That's souffle, isn't it?
You know, it's the smell of eggs coming from France. We've got cheese from Norway. We just need a fire at a German ham factory and Europe will smell like an omelette. It's absolutely fantastic.
Was it eggs? Was it actually eggs?
It's a harmless chemical that smells a bit like rotten eggs, yeah. It's called mecaptan.
They said it was a combination of drains, garlic and sweat. Mm. I thought that's like Jilly Goulden sampling Sunny Delight or something.
That's France.
It's the stuff they put into gas to make it smell like gas.
Yeah.
Which is such a confusing concept.
Yeah, that's a freaky one for the young people to grasp.
Whereas how do you know it smells like gas if gas doesn't smell like gas? I'm losing my mind here.
People were worried. They said, how can you tell if it's an actual gas leak or it's the smell coming from France? And it's really simple. Light a match. And
I did a sponsored swim in Hastings once and was coming last, of course, and just chatting away to the other fat person that was doing it. And this bloke on the beach shouted at me, "Shut your mouth." That's a bit rude. Mm. And I went, "How dare you?" And he went, "No, you're coming up to the sewage pipe." So, I don't think they would have noticed, really, in Hastings.
No.
This is Le Pong, the cloud of foul-smelling gas that drifted over to the south of England from a factory leak in Rouen, 60 miles northwest of Paris. In Paris, residents complained about the foul stench that was filling the streets. And then there was a gas leak. Kent Fire Service advised residents to keep their doors and windows shut. Up until then, presumably they'd had them open, enjoying the unseasonably warm weather we're experiencing. A spokesman from the French tourist board said, "I'd give it a few minutes if I were you." Two points to Bob. Joe, why might young people's lives be careering into oblivion?
Is that because last year they changed the way that the careers service is run and they stopped it being a separate thing and they handed the responsibility for it over to headmasters at individual schools?
Yeah.
So the headmasters went, "Oh, bugger it, let's not spend anything on it and all go down the pub." I know that's not strictly true, but that was sort of their attitude. So basically kids these days can't get face-to-face advice like you could in my day, because I remember going to the careers officer and she said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'd like to get married or be a nurse. And she went, better be a nurse then. So apparently they're having to get all the information they need online and it's hard to find and it's not very good and...
Well, there's a thing as well. I don't know, your kids are a bit young for it, but there's a thing where you...
No, they're
answer
already
questions
at work.
On...
They're 10 and 11, but, you know...
There's
it's
a
important.
Computer thing that you answer to work out what kind of career. Now, my daughter is now 24, but she's a photographer. But when she did the thing, we were quite excited. She was the first one to go through the system. And she came and I said, so, darling, what career? Baggage handler at Gatwick. They'd even picked the airport. It was really specific about it. And every time we go on holiday now, I go, that could have been you.
Your uncle, who lives on the Wirral, right? He had to go to the careers office and he said, I walked in the room and I sat there and this bloke started to talk to me about different opportunities. He said, and about 2 minutes in, I said, sorry, mate, are you Pete Best? Did you used to play drums for the Beatles? Yeah, I'm all right as it happens. That's what Pete Best, that's what he was. He became a careers advisor.
Can you imagine the distinction between that experience and, I don't know, going for careers advice at Eton or yeah. Harrow or something? They'd just sit there and go, now, let's see. Yes, I think you look like a transport secretary. It's just a completely different experience. What were you recommended to do, Jeremy?
When I left university in 1906, my dad said you should go into IT, and I didn't know what it was, and I just thought, yeah, whatever. What, that'll never catch on.
I want to believe that somewhere there's a genius careers officer who said to you, have you ever thought about curmudgeon?
A report by the Commons Education Select Committee has highlighted a worrying deterioration in the quality of careers advice after the government's decision to transfer the responsibility for it from councils to schools. Mary Bousted, leader of the Association of Teachers and Lecturers, said, the reality is that schools aren't run by magicians. Obviously never been to Hogwarts. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Hugo have got 9 points, but so too have Bob and Joe. We start round three with a cutting from the BBC News website.
We don't allow pornographic images, said 500px's chief operating officer. Nudity is filtered by a safe search function, which is turned on by default.
And our thanks to Richard Beale for sending us that. Jeremy, why is the stiff upper lip never better?
Is it us?
Yes.
It's us. Apparently, British people are well for 61 days a year. That sounds quite a lot to me. That's like more than one day a week when we actually feel quite perky. Mm. Most of the time we're a bit under the weather. But it's only low-level grumbling, isn't it?
So it's not taking time off sick, it's just not feeling
great. Yeah, just not feeling great.
But some people are well for 61... They obviously spoke to professional athletes.
Yeah.
Well,
not us.
The thing is, the survey was conducted by Spire Bristol Hospital. Do you not think the fact that they're asking the people in in a hospital?
Yeah.
OK, hands up in the audience. Who's feeling well today? Hands up in the audience, sir. Quite a lot of you. OK, hands up who realises they've just caught something horrible from the person sitting right next to you.
I don't trust people who say they feel good. Oh. It's just not British, is it?
Well, James Brown.
And I've never seen that new bag that his dad's supposed to have. I've never seen his dad walking around with a nice new bag. But, no, but you just... When someone says, yeah, really good, you think... You know, you want someone to say, oh, I'm OK, but I don't think I'll last a night. You don't want... You want someone to say, every day's a bonus. You don't want people saying, yeah, great, actually, really, really good. I feel really, really good. It's been great. I've given up wheat, dairy, caffeine, alcohol, pleasure. It's great. I feel really, really good. You don't want to be around that, do you?
Some of the averages were bizarre. On average, we all bite our tongue 3 times a year. I have never bitten my tongue in my life, so there must be somebody out there doing...
But I must do it 6 times a year for you, then.
Yeah, it must be...
To keep it... I do it
no,
all
what
the
about
time.
When chewing gum?
No, I've never... No, and no. The other one, we all suffer from 2 stitches a year. That sounds like my annual attempts at exercise. I am...
It's a really slow operation, that, isn't it?
Is. Apparently, we all feel, all of us in Britain feel at our best, Saturday lunchtimes. We have no idea that the news quiz is doing such a marvellous job. A study published by the Spire Bristol Hospital found that the average Briton feels unwell for 304 days of the year because people don't do enough to combat their ailments. The study of 2,000 people found that a quarter of us are permanently hampered by an illness, an ailment, or a nagging sense of confusion about where the Labour Party has got to. Each year, the average woman gets 4 colds, 1 eye infection, and 1 bout of flu, whilst the average man gets 4 cases of man flu, 1 eye tumour, and 1 bout of black death slash possible Ebola. The study's authors said we shouldn't suffer in silence unless you have a sore throat, in which case, tough titties. If you have tough titties... No, I can't be bothered. Two points to Jem. Hugo, where might country dwellers be permitted 3 for the road?
This is in Ireland. Mm. Is it Kerry?
It is in Kerry.
Kerry in Ireland,
yes.
Where a councillor has said old people don't get out because they can't drink, so we should change the law so that certain old people can get a permit from the police that says they're allowed to have more drinks and then drive home.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a wise and virtuous thing to do. Until you realise that the councillor who is proposing this owns a pub.
They passed it. 12 councillors didn't turn up at all, and I think 7 voted for it. It's been passed.
Did they make it home?
You've got to admire it. The County Kerry is brilliant, because it sounds like interference on the radio. Like, oh, in County Kerry, here, I have little people come in, sorry, say, because they're not being able to go to the pub. Not being able to go to the pub and have a drink or a theatre. They've just got this brilliant West of Ireland logic, which makes sense. I was doing a gig in Sligo, which is quite a long way to the north of Kerry. Years ago, I did this gig in Sligo, and I'd done my 1.5-hour show, and which is all bits of material that I'd put together over a long period of time. And this fellow came up to me afterwards, and he said, how long did it take you to write that show? And I said, oh, God, altogether? Well, I suppose it probably took me about a year to write all of it. And he said, took you a year to write it and only 1.5 hours to see it. And I thought, that's a fair enough criticism, isn't it? You should be able to write in real time, shouldn't you?
They do strange things over there, because a few years ago they had a big backlog of driving tests, didn't they? So they just said everyone that's got a provisional licence can have a full licence. No, they really did. They really
did. Yeah, but
you
had to be in the provisionals to get one.
I was on a driving holiday in Southern Ireland, and we got lost, and I stopped a guy in the street, and I said, excuse me, do you know the way to Castle Connell? And he said, did you want to go to Dunray? I want to go to Castle Connell. Are you sure you don't want to go to Dunray? And I said, no, I want to go to Castle Connell. He said, it's a shame, because I know where Dunray is. Thanks.
There could just be a thing where you just drive really slowly, depending if you're really drunk, that you have to drive at 5 miles an hour and that you have to have, like, a big spongy plastic car. Because cars could be made of soft things, couldn't they?
Quite like the
idea. You have polystyrene cars. They'd be more fuel efficient, they'd be warm.
Yeah.
They'd go up in flames, but... I haven't even completely thought this through.
I quite like the idea that the signs on the side of the road that say 30 represents the number of units you're allowed to drink. Councillors in County Kerry have backed a motion allowing residents in isolated rural areas to drink and drive. Councillor Danny Healy-Ray said it would help locals suffering with depression to get out for a drink, which is why antidepressants always say, take one a day with 6 pints of lager. Healy-Ray said the change would bring back a social outlet for people isolated since stricter drink driving limits and also boost Ireland's flagging floral wreath and bereavement counselling. 2 points to Hugo. Joe, who's flooding us with requests to build Frosty some friends?
Has some Nana said we should build loads of snowmen because it will prevent the thaw happening quite so quickly?
Yes. And
I can't remember, what's the advantage of a thaw not happening?
It'll
so
stop
quick?
Flooding if we slow down the thawing process.
How ridiculous
and we can do
is
this
that?
By making snowmen.
they'll come to life. And the snowmen will sing, I'm sandbagging the river. Because that's what's going to cure the flooding.
Because you can tell whether a snowman's been made by a working class person or above. Because yeah. It's a working class person, it's got a McDonald's burger bun on its face. And if it's a middle class person, it's got a carrot, because they eat vegetables, obviously.
BBC Online ran with the headline, Can building snowmen really help to prevent flooding? I don't know if you've seen it, but the gist of it is no. Roy Stokes, a spokesman for the Environment Agency, suggested that building snowmen may reduce the risk of properties flooding by slowing down the thawing process. The Environment Agency later distanced themselves from his remarks by saying, I'm sorry, Roy who? After a week of freezing weather, temperatures this weekend could rise to 10 degrees Celsius. That's 50 degrees Fahrenheit in old money, or if you live in Newcastle, bikini weather. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Hardy.
This has been sent in by Mike Murray, and it's from the Huffington Post. London Victoria train station reopened and trains are running as normal with delays.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is from Matt Davey in Dublin. It's from the Irish Times, and it's about the inauguration. It says, after the address, Mr. and Mrs. Obama, Vice President Joe Biden and Mrs. Biden feasted on steamed lobster, hickory-grilled bison and apple pie with lawmakers.
Mr. Mills.
This is from Prue Woods. This is a very nice thing. W.H. Smith voucher. And it says on it, 20% off everything with this voucher. Excludes newspapers, magazines, confectionery, CDs, DVDs, games, gaming, consoles, stamps, tobacco, stickers and collectibles, gift vouchers, phone cards, e-top-ups, iTunes, e-card gifts, magazine gift subscriptions, KOBOR, e-readers, e-books, book customer tokens, book theatre tokens, day-out vouchers and lottery products, subject to availability, valid in high street stores only.
Ms. Brand.
This is from Felicity Hannah, and it's a quote from the Joseph Rowntree Foundation on the health minister's comments that the poor are more likely to be fat. There is good evidence that poor people tend to be fatter overall, although there are some big butts.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Hugo have got 13 points, but this week's winners, for no reason at all, Bob and Joe with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the BBC Scotland website sent in by Wynne Shilland.
The Lecht Ski Centre was closed on Saturday due to heavy snow on the access roads. A planned World Snow Day event at the Glen Shee Ski Centre on Sunday has been cancelled.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Hugo Rifkin, Bob Mills and Joe Brand. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clubston. The chair script was written by Ben Partridge, Lucy Clark and Rodri Crooks, with additional material by Annie Birchall and Tom Neenan. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.